Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council member at large, joins us. J.P., welcome to the show.
Thanks, Noel. It's good to talk. Be here. Good to talk.
So, J.P., I know it was reported out the other day, I think just yesterday maybe, that the case with the Hignell decision, which was in the Fifth Circuit relative to short-term rentals, was decided. The city won some issues, and the plaintiffs, I guess, won some issues. Tell us about it.
Well, essentially, the plaintiffs had a lot of different kind of proposals. The first was they believe that everyone has a constitutional right to short-term rental whatever property they want. That was really their central argument, and that argument fell on its face. It's fallen on its face repeatedly. It fell on its face just recently in district court in Airbnb's own direct lawsuit. There was a lot of questions as to whether or not we could make people who were doing STR rentals have to disclose information publicly, like their permit number. That's important because that's how we track what is an illegal versus a legal short-term rental. We won that. The only two issues that we really didn't win on, and one was a significant one, was that in our STR ordinance, you are required to be an actual natural person to have a permit, because we did not want people who have to compete with businesses or LLCs, which might pursue multiple permits and kind of the Saunders model. We did not win on that one. So going forward, as we have future lotteries for STRs, real people will be in competition with corporate, you know, quote unquote people. That is an issue that's significant. The challenge is, Newell, as you know, that actually, though I don't like it, that is actually consistent with Supreme Court rulings, because Supreme Court, since Citizens United, has said that corporations are people. And so I don't know. We're talking to our lawyers to see whether or not that's something we would be successful with on appeal. But really, with that decision and with the platform accountability we've already done regarding making the platforms have to check affirmatively with the city before listing short-term rentals, we've seen a very precipitous drop, somewhere between 75 and 80% of illegal listings. And so the ruling, I would say, probably was 90% in our favor, and we're evaluating whether it's worth risking the 10%. Because as you know, the next step past the Fifth Circuit is the Supreme Court, which is very expensive and very friendly to corporations.
So what is it that you're really concerned with when you have this friction between a natural person, an actual, you know, person under the law, it's called natural person, versus a juridical person, right, which would be an LLC or some other type of corporate structure? Is there something that you don't find out if there's an LLC that owns the property or some other corporate entity?
Well, when you look at the messaging Airbnb has when they're pushing residential short-term rentals, the argument, as I'm sure you've seen, is, well, let's that little old lady rent that room in the back of her house so that she can make her ends meet. What? Affordable housing in our housing market and making it unavailable for actual people who need to buy homes. What we saw around COVID, Newell, was that we had an artificial spike in our real estate market where housing became unaffordable because people who were trying to buy a house in our market were competing with a couple of New Yorkers who put together an LLC. So STRs, especially neighborhood ones, were meant to be an ancillary use. They weren't meant to be a commercial venture. If you want to do a commercial venture, well, first off, buy part of a hotel. But if you're going to do that as purely an investment model, that is more palatable with commercial short-term rentals and commercial corridors. It's not fair to neighborhoods to have businesses buying up houses where people could live just so they can rent them to bachelor parties. That was the goal. But as stated, there's that tension because there is Supreme Court precedence that you cannot discriminate between people and corporations as people. That being said, because we've moved to a lottery system, because we're limited to one STR per block, an argument can be made that since we've addressed the density issues, the likelihood was impossible now for you to have a block full of short-term rentals where people can't live, because the entire model post our ordinance changed anyway, where you can only have one commercial short-term rental per square block anyway. Now, what it does mean is that if you're that little old lady and you're not going after a short-term rental so that you can afford to pay your mortgage and your higher insurance, you will be in competition with some dude bros from New York who got together on the weekend and put together a chunk of money to buy a house, and it's investment. And I don't know, based on this ruling, how we can limit that.
It's kind of interesting. I'm wondering if from a taxation situation, owner-occupied structures pay one rate and then others pay a commercial rate. This is a new phenomenon. It's kind of an anomaly to what it is, and maybe there's an opportunity to create a third rate.
Thank you. 100% right, Noel. I think one of the big issues we had early on with short-term rentals is we had rampant homestead exemption fraud, where we had individuals who live in Texas, you know, live in Kentucky. To get one property in New Orleans, and there was not a reasonable effort by the assessor to go out there and actually verify these houses were actually being used as primary homes. And I mean, homestead exemption fraud was pretty rampant. Now that we've kind of got a handle on who actually holds a permit versus chasing down the illegal STRs, then also verifying whether or not they had a valid homestead exemption, I think we'll be able to clap down on that. But it might require us to go to the legislature and clarify some law that once you obtain a short-term rental permit, that unless you affirmatively state that it is a primary home, that we could tax it as commercial property.
Yeah, and then you are they required to get a sales tax number? Are they exempt from hotel motel tax?
No, they pay a portion of hotel motel tax. There's actually legislation last year brought by the city of New Orleans to make Airbnb actually pay the same rate as hotels, and unfortunately it was not successful because the Airbnb lobby killed it. But I believe that the hotel industry, the convention industry, they're going to come back next year a bit more organized, because if we could bring hotel motel tax to the same level as an Airbnb as we do rooms, A, it would increase the revenue to the city, because remember, part of the revenue that's paid by hotels and motels is the money generated from New Orleans and company to generate people to come to the city.
Sure.
Right now, Airbnb is benefiting from the advertising, but they're not paying for it, which
no,
is
absolutely
tacitly unfair. They also have no employees, so whereas a hotel, motel, a bed and breakfast has employees that also go into the economy and payroll taxes, Airbnb pays nothing. So there's a whole host of things that if we could get into the Airbnb model and just make them level with the other commercial rentals, short-term rentals, whether it be a hotel or the like, the city would actually see a benefit versus what they see now, which is more of a burden.
I understand that some of these corporate Airbnb ventures in some cities, I don't know if you've seen it here, they do a couple of different things. They provide ancillary services such as you send a grocery list to them. They will have groceries delivered to the Airbnb location, and there's a 10 to 15% upcharge on that service. They also rent some of these structures that they have by the bedroom, not by the structure. And when you start doing things like just these two, and there are others that they do as well, to include limo service, driver service, and some other things, you're a hotel. I mean, there's no difference. Yeah, I mean, you're...
To your point, Noel, now with Airbnb experiences, they provide personal chefs. They provide all of these things, which to your point, you're no longer the little old lady or the single mom who's renting out a room or your back guest house. Once you're providing personal chefs and bundling things together like a travel agent, you are a resort, and we tax resorts at a tremendously different rate than we tax a single family house that's allegedly renting a room. And I mean, it's all these things they do. It does two things. One, all these different things are further cost inputs to Airbnb that we're skipping out on as the state and locals. But more importantly, they're competing with homegrown businesses that are paying all those taxes.
Right. Yeah. And getting health permits and doing this and doing that and a whole lot of other things that they're having to pay as well. I agree with you. It's obviously there's a strategy that you want to develop. It's not always good to just keep going up the appellate level. If there's enough in there, you know, the juice has got to be worth it. How's the saying go? To squeeze? The juice has got to be worth the squeeze.
Yes, worth the squeeze.
And deciding that one way or the other. And if enough of this is important that you want already, sometimes you don't want to put that at risk.
I 100% agree, which is why we have our attorneys looking at it, the city attorney, the council attorney. And when Hignell originally went up Newell in 2019, and even after 2023 when we passed the new ordinance, platform accountability wasn't on the radar. And so the decision in Hignell not only doesn't undermine platform accountability, it further, for the second time in a row, says city councils, municipalities, parishes, that we absolutely can regulate short-term rentals. That is one of those things where I don't know what the Airbnb sponsored plaintiffs will do, but from our perspective, if we've won 90% of what we want and platform accountability, which is the most important piece, is still viable and live, that's the analysis we have to do. Is the corporate person issue worth the risk of catching the car and getting the Supreme Court to actually weigh in on it? Because right now, we've won at every lower level, and Supreme Court litigation is very expensive and it's very risky.
Yeah, no doubt. Let us pivot, JP, if I could, to follow up on something that I've been talking about quite a bit here at WWL, the budget scuffle relative to revelations made by the mayor in needing more revenue. The revenue needs to meet y'all where you are, which that was an interesting way of putting things. But where are we?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The mayor had a host of aggressive ideas for raising revenue, and a lot of them, I can tell you from the council perspective, are non-starters. This raising the sanitation fee when we have once-a-week service is a non-starter. We need to really, over the next term, explain to people what the sanitation fee covers, what sanitation costs actually are, and maybe over time have a conversation about how we get back to two-a-day pickup. Doing a sanitation fee increase just for revenue, one, a fee has to be for a service. So doing a fee to put money in the general fund that does not actually present a new service could legally be problematic. There were a lot of conversations regarding parking. I will tell you, speaking to my colleagues, we're less interested in raising the hourly rate, and we are more interested in expanding the time in which you can park. So, for example, Newell, rather than doubling the parking rate and capping it at 2 hours, we'd be more interested in keeping the parking rate the same and expanding the period of parking for 3 to 4 hours. That way you're actually generating revenue, but you're doing it in exchange for a benefit, because most people would like the option to park for 3 or 4 hours to explore the city and to not have to run back to feed the meter. You know what I'm saying, Newell?
Sure.
And that way, it's a way to generate revenue, but not a way to do it where it's an additional burden on people. It's additional option. If you only going to park 2 hours, then there's no increase to how much your parking costs. But if you want to enjoy an extra hour or two, you can pay for in advance. We get that money on the front end, less parking tickets. But as you've seen from the mayor's report, we've got over $100 million in parking tickets they don't collect. So I'd rather people have more options to pay on the front end and pay into the meter than us ticket them and then never collect the ticket revenue. That's not really a benefit. A lot of our other revenue measures are interesting, but I think another one that we're looking at, the city does not, right now our ground transportation for the most part shuts down at the end of business hours. We do not tow at night. And if you talk to businesses throughout the CBD in the quarter, there's a tremendous amount of revenue being left on the table by people parking illegally all over downtown, Marini, Bywater, and the CBD. And more importantly, Newell, if you talk to any law enforcement person, there are direct correlations between the people that are parking illegally to get in and out of the quarter and some of the nefarious things that happen. So it's a safety issue. It messes with sight lines and it messes with businesses. And it's a pressure point where for those people that park legally, they'll never have to pay that extra tax. You know what I mean? So we're more interested in that stuff at the moment than we are in some of the other revenue proposals. Also, there hasn't been enough of an accounting of what we can do internally to absorb these costs before going to fee increases, because as you know, the budget has continued to grow over years, but the amount of services has not met the growth. We need to really revisit what's being provided by which departments and whether or not, if we have positions that are unfilled in departments that do not need the positions, how can we realize some savings and how do we make revenue increases the last thing we do, not the first thing we do?
Yeah, no, I got it. Let me pivot again real quick, JP. A lot of consternation trying to figure out the deficit, where it stands. Are we closer to understanding how much of a deficit we have?
Well, the number has varied anywhere from mid-60s, $65 million to as high as $100 million. And the number gets very conflated because on one day they'll say that the $65 million deficit is due to personnel, and then another day they'll say that $65 million in personnel is further inflated by a miscalculation, a low input of revenue by about $30 million. The reason why the council unanimously called the legislative auditor in is that the number has such a huge delta, we need a third party to kick the tires and say, here is the actual number, because that number is going to drive how much revenue we have to create and how much of the deficit can be realized without a revenue increase at all. And so we should have that number from the legislative auditor, he said, once he got in here in about 2 to 3 weeks. So we should have it before the end of the initial budget meetings we are going to hold throughout October. As you know, in November, we try to start doing a bit more forward-facing meetings with the public after the budget has kind of been molded into a more draft form. And having that real number as we go to the public is going to be essential in finally getting a budget passed before December 1st.
I asked you this question before. I asked Councilman Oliver Thomas this question the other day about whether or not, as members of the city council, y'all receive monthly sales tax reports as to how much was collected in the previous months. And he said no, and I think you've told me no in the past as well.
No, we don't.
And the same holds true for property tax. Usually by February, you should have most of your collections done, certainly in excess of 90% of collections done. Do y'all receive a report relative to that as well?
No, I mean, the only time that there's a public disclosure of sales tax and property tax revenue is during the quarterly revenue estimating committees. And the challenge there is, because it's revenue estimating, they are telling us how much was collected, but at the same time, it also gets wrapped into the forecast of how much they believe they will continue to collect throughout the course of the year. And there's not really an effort to highlight specifically if the revenues are not meeting projections, how do we resolve it? I mean, part of the issue is, and we talked about this previously, Newell, is that, as you know, we only had 24 sales tax audits in the entire year of 2024. That is a ridiculously low number. That is less than a tenth of what Jefferson Parish did in the same year. And though I do understand, and the administration told us, that they are switching to a new, more efficient system, we can't have underperforming sales tax audits for multiple years as they figure it out. And so I was given the information by several different parishes of what third parties they use to do sales tax collection. And I think there's going to have to be an ongoing aggressive effort to see what we need to do as far as securing contracts or other assistance and getting those audits to where you need to be. Because when you're talking about increasing revenue by more taxation, if you're not attacking the revenue you're leaving on the table, you're making the people that pay their taxes, pay their fines, pay their fees in an earnest, honest way, you're double and triple hitting them without hitting people potentially who are large or small business owners who are charging customers sales tax and pocketing it. Because I think I have to remind people all the time, and you're aware of this, Newell, used to be a collector. The reason why audits are so important is because it's not that that guy selling you that thing is making it cheaper for you. They're literally usually pocketing the money. So you're paying the tax and government's not getting it. And so we're both getting whammied.
Yeah. I mean, not all, but there are a lot of folks that do that, and you want to catch them because it infects the whole culture of this. It's an honor system. You don't want it to get off and running. But without those monthly reports, it's really hard for you guys to really, I think, get a game plan as to what you're proposing to do in the back half of the year. And if you start to see a trend set in the front end of the year, because, you know, typically before the end of the first quarter, you should know about your property tax collections. And that's not a very dynamic number. By March, it gets pretty static. Your sales tax numbers are different every month, and you want to track those so that you know if you're not going to hit targets for a big spend that you may have at the end of the year, you may start thinking about that spend, because history tends to repeat itself, and you're not going to get big gains unless we have something out of the ordinary in the city, and that's possible, you know, to make up the difference. It's just the way it works. And so you don't get in these deficit positions because you have a good understanding. You know, that's about 90% of the revenue that you get into the general fund. You know, and it's valuable to have that information. You know, information's power. The more you have, the better off you are.
Well, and to your point, Newell, if you're following the sales tax collection month by month in a real critical way, then you see a pattern where it's not meeting its goals. You start making adjustments in the front of the year, not the end of the year.
Sure, absolutely.
Because we at the administration, when we realized there was an issue in April, after initially being told it might be an issue in February, had the administration, and I mean, I know Councilman DeRusso does not get enough credit for this. He's been asking since February for a plan on how to dial down revenue expenses, and we didn't get one. We were just told it's all going to work out. I mean, there's that kind of legendary exchange between Councilman Thomas and the CAO, Gil Montano, about what cuts need to be made, and we were repeatedly told, none, it's all going to work out, and then it didn't.
Yeah, and then it didn't. and that's when you know it's not going to be worked out in this fiscal year, right? Exactly. Councilman J.P. Morrell, as always, we truly appreciate your time, your insight. Thank you so much for the update as well. Have a great week.
Thank you.
All right, that's Councilman J.P. Morrell, council member at large. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.